I don't think we can go to a better source than going to the Gospels themselves. When we're told of that magnificent call of Andrew and his immediate response to Jesus saying, come follow me, as following him, and not only that, but bringing his brother Peter too, one might say, two princes of the apostles called by Jesus himself, and an immediate response to that call.
And do we know anything about his character?
Well, I would say with regard to his character, I would say fidelity to Jesus Christ. Like the other apostles, he helped spread the gospel, and of course the spread of the gospel to Greece attributed to him, and various other countries round about that area of the globe of that time. The scripture reading from St. Paul's gospel, speaking about fidelity to Christ, is one of the chosen readings for our celebrations here in Scotland. And I think that's one thing that we all try to learn from him here in Scotland. Fidelity to Jesus Christ, whatever else is going on round about us at the present time.
Now, he's also the patron saint, not just of Scotland, but of the Orthodox Church. Is that because of his missionary work in that part of the world?
Yes, that's exactly right. He's believed to be responsible for spreading the gospel literally all over that part of the world, into the Ukraine, into Russia itself. And consequently, he's regarded as being the patron saint, not just of Scotland, but of these countries as well. And we're only too happy to share tribute to Andrew with all of them as well.
And do we have any idea as to why November the 30th was chosen as the date for his feast day?
No, I don't think so. If one does go back in history, it's firmly believed here in Scotland that major relics of Andrew were brought to Scotland and landed in the town now called St. Andrews. And it could be that it was round about that date, that time of the year, that the relics came, and that's why this is regarded as a feast day. And, of course, Scotland, St. Andrews, the town of St. Andrews in Scotland, because of these major relics of St. Andrew being there, and that's why it was regarded as the primatial see, the first see in Scotland, and remained as such down through the centuries then. And, of course, there was the Protestant Reformation taking place about 450, 500 years ago, when these major relics were lost and the cathedral in St. Andrews was destroyed. Well, there are ruins there at the present time. But when the hierarchy was restored in Scotland in 1878, the title given to my predecessors here in the east of Scotland wasn't just Edinburgh, Archbishops of Edinburgh in the eastern province, but rather Archbishops of St. Andrews in Edinburgh. So I maintain that I'm one of the few archbishops in the world with two cathedrals, my ruined one in St. Andrews and my present one, which is about 200 years old now, here in the capital city of Edinburgh.
Now, you talked there about his remains, and of course, like most of these famous saints, his remains have been shipped back and forth across the world. So
yeah.
What exactly does Scotland have now, and what other principal body parts are there in Rome or other parts of the world?
Well, major relics were taken from Constantinople to Amalfi in Italy, where there's a major shrine of St. Andrew there in St. Andrew's Cathedral in Amalfi. When the hierarchy was restored, a major relic was given to us from Amalfi, and that's preserved in our cathedral here in Edinburgh. And another very moving thing happened when my predecessor, Cardinal Grey, was made a cardinal some 40 years ago now. After the formal installation as a cardinal, Pope Paul VI at the time gave him another relic from St. Andrew, and it was presented in St. Peter's Basilica in Rome, as I say, at a very moving ceremony, when Paul VI gave this relic to my predecessor with the very simple words, Peter greets his brother Andrew. So Peter, the successor of Paul VI, his brother Andrew, my predecessor, Cardinal Grey. And those two major relics are now preserved in the St. Andrew's altar in our cathedral. And every St. Andrew's Day, after our solemn mass of the feast day, we pay due reverence to those major relics, which are on permanent display in the cathedral here in Edinburgh.
Now, coming back to how St. Andrew came to be associated with Scotland, I mean, there are some quite colourful explanations there, but what is generally considered to be the most credible one?
As to his being made our patron saint, well, it is believed that at some of the famous battles here in Scotland, and may I say it, sometimes against the English coming into the country, the sign of St. Andrew, the cross on which is reputed to have died, you know, the X-shaped cross rather than the upright cross on which Jesus died, but that appeared in the sky. The Battle of Athens-Sainsford in East Lothian here is one of the instances when a beautiful blue sky and the white cross, the saltire, appeared in the sky, the emblem of Andrew. And, of course, that's the origin of St. Andrew's flag, a blue background with the white cross in the shape of an X imposed on it. And references often made to that proud history of Scotland and its association with St. Andrew.
Right, let's take a look at St. Andrew's Day's customs and observances in Scotland, which have sort of become more important of late, haven't they? And I gather that only recently St. Andrew's Day became a national holiday in Scotland. Why did it take so long?
Well, I think the reverence paid to saints had faded somewhat since the Reformation here in Scotland. But in recent years, it has been realised that it is important for our countries to preserve our Christian roots, to have a patron saint, and particularly one as distinguished as an apostle. And as well as Mass is being celebrated in our Catholic cathedrals on this particular feast day, more and more Christians of other denominations are observing St. Andrew's Day. And one might say, too, our Scottish Parliament here in Edinburgh, naturally becoming of increasing importance as well, as a focal point for teaching, Christian teaching. And actually, on St. Andrew's Day this year, I will be at the Scottish Parliament leading, one might say, Christian witness to the Christianity, the Christian roots of our country, and speaking there publicly especially about possibilities of same-sex unions being regarded as marriages here in Scotland and permitted to be celebrated and solemnised in our Catholic churches and churches of other denominations. Needless to say, our Catholic Church here in Scotland is vehemently opposed to this. And where better to lead the opposition than at the door of Parliament itself and reminding our Scottish Parliament, our members of the Scottish Parliament, of the Christian roots of our country again and the Christian message which St. Andrew upheld throughout his life.
There are, of course, more secular ways of marking St. Andrew's Day. I gather that the focal point of them, of course, is in St. Andrew's. Can you tell us about some of those, whether they're attending traditional music concerts or celebrating Scottish cuisine? What sort of things are on offer?
There are indeed a variety of secular celebrations round about this time. In fact, invariably, I'm at Edinburgh Castle as well, with major celebrations taking there, with the pipe bands, the pipers, traditional Scottish food, haggis and so on. And invariably, I gather with priests and former students from our St. Andrew's Seminary, our diocesan seminary. We don't have a seminary here in Scotland at the present time, but over the decades when we had, St. Andrew's Day, of course, was a major celebration within the seminary, and now we have it at major celebration in our cathedral. So we celebrate, yes, in a religious way, but then in our traditional ways as well. And some of those traditional ways, of course, were seen when our Holy Father, Pope Benedict XVI, was here with us in Scotland also, when he dined here in my own home, and the starter course was haggis, so that he got a taste of that tradition of cuisine, as well as a good Scots steak. So we have our cultural celebrations, food celebrations as well.
And did Pope Benedict enjoy the haggis?
Well, I wouldn't like to speak for our Holy Father, but he certainly was helped to enjoy it by the other cardinals and distinguished guests who were there. Clean plates were returned to the kitchen.